welcome to Chasing the Insights, the podcast designed for you, the marketer, the entrepreneur, the small business owner. I'm your host, Vince Warnock, and in each episode, we talk to the biggest and brightest brains in marketing, extracting every ounce of insight to give you that unfair advantage as you grow your business. Hello, beautiful people. Welcome to another episode of Chasing the Insights. How you all doing? I'm Vince Warnock. And thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy day. Oh my goodness, to join me here so I get to talk to literally some of the smartest people in the industry. You'll know what I mean shortly because I'm about to introduce you to Dr. Deborah Mandel. But before I do that, very quickly, I don't want you to miss a single episode of this show. So whatever platform, whatever app, whatever tool, basically however you're listening to this right now, if you haven't already, reach out and give that subscribe or follow button a push. That way you're notified every time there's a new episode. Anyway, my friends, you are in for a treat. I'm here to introduce you to Dr. Deborah Mandel. She's a nationally renowned psychologist with over 30 years of experience. But by my calculation, that means she started when she was like five. But she brings a no-nonsense yet compassionate approach to the forefront and is the author of, get this, 4 books, including her best-selling Dump That Chump. I love that name. She's been featured on national television, radio shows, all these different things as a relationship expert. But more than that, she's now at the pinnacle of her career because she's on this show. I kid you, of course. But Deborah, thank you so much for joining us. Seriously, it's such an honor having you on the show.
It is truly a delight and my pleasure. Thank you so much. And boy, what an introduction. I think you should just stop there. I shouldn't open my mouth and just let people think what they think.
I love it. I tell you what, though, anytime I'm talking to psychologists, it's really intimidating because I'm like, I'm pretty sure they're analyzing me. But anyway.
That's a myth because you can't really analyze somebody without knowing who they are. And by the way, I don't analyze per se. I get curious about who people are ask questions so I can find out more deeply what makes someone tick and what they're dealing with.
I really like that. I think forget psychology. That's just something we should all be doing as humans. Get really curious about other people. I love it. Awesome. Well, you mentioned it's a delight. It is an absolute delight to have you here. And I'm super excited about this episode because we're going to be talking about your process of writing a book, and you've got your new book out, which is just out, but we're going to go all the way back to your first book and everything. Before we dive into that, though, the other reason I'm excited is because you and I get to hang out, which is always fun. So, Deborah, Before we get started, give us your backstory. Like, tell us how you got to where you are now and why you're so passionate about what you do.
Okay. Well, yes, that will be dating me many decades ago. Actually,
when you were five, remember? Yeah.
Yes, I did start my career at five. You're right. That would make me 35. Perfect. I love it. I was just one of those super curious kids and one of those kids who people just love to come and share whatever they were thinking, whatever they were feeling. I'm just like, I was like a sponge for that. So I had a natural inclination toward diving into some kind of field where I would really get to work with people and understand the workings of the mind. I also came from a pretty dysfunctional family. Long story there, but parents were immigrants, dad from Poland, Holocaust survivor, mom from Estonia, and had to get to Sweden to avoid being in a communist country, and then made it out here. They met in Canada. Anyway, they really had no idea how to parent, and they didn't speak any languages together. Between the two of them, they spoke 11 languages, but neither of them spoke English. Raised with parents learning English and going to school, and there was a lot of stuff going on. And so I just took all that, and by teenage years, I was saying, I need to go to therapy. My parents would say, what, are you crazy? I'd say, yes, let me go to therapy. And there was a little bit of manipulation here because I actually went into graduate school because there was a requirement to go to therapy. And then I knew my dad would pay for it because he was all about education. So that's kind of, a little cryptic version of how I got interested in the field, but I've always been very passionate about helping people and learning about what makes people tick.
Awesome. Oh man, I love that journey. I was just picturing a household where, they don't speak the same language, but they speak multiple different languages. It was like, oh my goodness, this is so challenging. Oh, I love it. Well, as I said, we're going to talk about your process of writing a book, and we're going to talk about this whole journey of writing a book, actually. And one of the things that you've got your new book out at the moment, which is Sassy and Rude, Her New Attitude. But before we kind of talk about that, let's go all the way back to your first book. Tell us what the book was and tell us, what the book is about.
Okay, wonderful. So I'm going to even go back a little bit farther when I was in graduate school, and I happened to pick my dissertation chairperson, who was about as perfectionistic as anybody could be. And I don't know why. I don't know why I picked her. Maybe it had something to do with my mother, who was also an extreme perfectionist. But she was so critical of my writing. And I'd always been an A or A plus student in English and in writing, composition, et cetera, poetry. And she just would nail me. And she would write just horrible messages in my work, just saying, "This is, I can't understand this. This is the wrong word," et cetera. And I showed it to one of my friends who was an English major, and she looked it over. She says, "Woman is crazy." I said, "Well, probably." So I literally changed five things in one of my papers I had for her, and she said, "This is perfect. Why didn't you do this the first time?" I'm like, oh boy. Anyway, I ended up picking her to be my chairperson, and she was a challenge. And she would criticize me like crazy. So I got very intimidated about writing. I just had no interest at all. So that was in my early and mid 20s where I had that experience. And then somewhere in my 30s and late 30s, I said, you know what? I got to get over that because I don't like anything from history dictating how I can be in the present. And I knew that deep in my heart that I had things to say and I had good things to say. So the process began with my actually writing a full manuscript. I didn't know anything about the writing field. I had no idea that what publishers want in my arena is nonfiction and self-help is that you need to write a proposal, a book proposal, and a sample chapter or two, not the whole manuscript. So I wrote the whole manuscript. I had a friend who had an agent who had written a cooking book, and she decided to give me her agent. So I sent this off to her agent to take a look, and she said, "You know, you have great ideas, but you are a science and academic writer. You are not a self-help writer. Go back to the drawing board and figure that out." Like, okay. So that's what I did. I hired some writing consultants. I learned about the process of a proposal, et cetera, and I finally had something that I thought was pretty good. And I sent it out. And it was a grueling process because I really didn't know at all what I was doing, but I was learning along the way. So it was a very huge education, practical education, hands-on, boots to the ground, figure it out type of thing. And do you want to know about the picking an agent and getting a publisher and
Oh
all that
yeah, let's
stuff?
talk us through that because honestly, mainly because there's a lot of misconceptions about that. A lot of people think that's really easy, or they think that that's the only way you need to do it. So talk us through that process.
So I toyed with the idea of self-publishing because that was gaining a lot of popularity at that time. That's when I think Jack Canfield and the Chicken Soup for the Soul and writing classes I went to, they said, "Oh my goodness, these people made millions and you get to keep all your rights." But then I also realized that that was going to be very hard for me to be out there publicizing it and knowing what to do to actually get it to sell. I mean, they already had such a following and I was a nobody. I was a independent practitioner working in small settings or private practice. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to try this. What's the worst thing that's going to happen is I'm going to get a bunch of rejections. All right, so that's what happens. Okay, and by God, that is what happened. So I finalized my proposal. It went through many titles. The original title was Dr. Deborah's Incomplete Guide to Partial Mental Health, and it became, oh, I think I'm going to write about childhood wounds and how they affect our. May have it more focused, childhood wounds and how they affect our adult lives. So then it became The Tender-Hearted Trap. And then it became, then that's how it went out as a book proposal. So I think I sent out 45 submissions, and that was grueling, by the way. I got these books where you had to research which publishers or which agents first take on which kinds of projects, because some only do fiction, some do nonfiction, some do children's books, et cetera, et cetera. And so I went through that process, weeded out. I handpicked around 40, maybe 45 agents, and I sent a cover letter, is what they want. And then they asked to see the proposal. Several asked to see the proposal. And then I sent them in, and out of all of them, rejected by all but one. And I said, one is all I need.
Exactly. That's awesome. Well,
So,
congratulations
yeah.
on getting that.
Thank you. Thank you. So she took me on, and we went through some more revisions in the proposal, and then I got a publisher, And that was also about 45 rejections
Wow.
and one acceptance, but that's all we needed. And then I got an advance to write the book, which they pay you half, and then you write it. And it ended up being called Healing the Sensitive Heart.
Nice. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, that's, yeah. I mean, this is the part people don't realize is how much rejection is actually in line. And they don't realize what they're looking for as well. I mean, a lot of publishers are not just looking at, is this book sound like it's going to be something that will sell? They're not looking necessarily looking at going, is this something that, could win awards and things? What they're really looking at is, we don't do any marketing. Has Deborah actually got the following enough to be able to market this herself? And if she doesn't, is this book solid enough on its own to be able to find a market? So, yeah, I
You
like
are so right, because that is actually a book proposal for those in the audience who don't know about that. It is what's the overview? What is it about? Who is the author, and why is this author the one to write this?
Bingo.
What is You have to do a huge competitive analysis. What else is out there? Why is yours better and different? Because they want some competition to know that it is a subject matter that people have attended to and are interested in, but not so much that you're just gonna blend into the rest of the books on the shelf and not be noticed. And also, just what you mentioned, what are you gonna do to promote it and market it? They're gonna do very little, so you have
Oh,
to be
if
willing to
anything,
do a lot.
yeah. Now I had this with my first book, and Deborah. I didn't have to pitch it, thank goodness, because I was on stage in San Francisco and speaking to about 10,000 people there at this conference. Just won a major award. I got recognized by Adobe as one of the top 50 marketers in the world, while also the chief marketing officer at a Fortune 100 company. So when you have those combination of kind of factors, and you say on stage, I'm writing a book. I've finished my draft manuscript. Then you get the scurrying from within the audience. Every publisher there go, oh, this guy's got a big following. He's got the recognition.
Yes.
Plus, he's got the accolades. We'll get a lot of PR at the moment. Let's have a chat to him. And then I turn them all down. So the IP side of
Wow.
it
Yeah.
was a game changer for me. I just said, no, I can't give away the IP. Like it's because obviously once they have it, it's their book, and you can't just go
Yes.
and give that book away because that's their loss of revenue. You can't go, I'm going to a conference, I want 1,000 copies to give away there. They're like, no, you can buy 1,000 copies and you get a
Right.
discount, but you're not going to give them away for free, So.
Sure. So in many ways, we had the opposite experience. You already had a big following. I did not at all. So I had to create a pretty good sales pitch to have take a chance on me, and it was a challenge.
I was going to say, it's not only a good sales pitch, your concept must have been that solid that they went, you know what, we can take a risk on this one. We think that this is the right thing to do. I love that. Yeah. So talk us through what that book was about, Deborah, that first book.
Yeah, Healing the Sensitive Heart was my first love, I would say, because that was really there's so much of my own experience and a lot of clients that I worked with who had been abused or neglected or mistreated as children, and how they can overcome that. And the premise of the book is how to move past victim and survivor mentality and get into thriver mentality, because so many people stay at survivor. They say, I survived child abuse, I survived incest, I survived, which still is It's a prison. It may be a minimum security prison, but it's still a prison because it's not allowing you to be free from that. So the idea in the book is to give people tools, practical tools, a lot of writing tools, journaling, a lot of imagery, things to really, bite their teeth into, to be able to alter the mentality so that it's not just staying stuck as a survivor, but actually being free from prison and being in thriver mentality, which is that my past does not define me. Yes, I endured, I experienced these types of events. However, I don't have the anxiety about it anymore. I don't get sweaty palms and stutter when I think about it. It's like a lot of trauma treatments today, like EMDR, are focused on helping people be able to remember traumatic events without the visceral, without the body's response to it. And so it was really about
I
that.
love somatic methods like that, EMDR, EFT. They work also really well for people like me with huge imagination. So I think anyone with ADHD, because a lot of it's visualization and things like that, and
Yes.
just being able to like just being able to go back to a past memory and rewiring it. I mean, think about that. That's pretty damn awesome. Love it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
Well,
so
I
that
mean,
was.
as soon as you even describe that book, I know I need to get a few copies and send it to some people that I know because I could really use that. But talk us through now. You wrote the manuscript before signing, and even an agent and things like that. Like, talk us through that process of writing that manuscript, because obviously you're talking about something you're very passionate about, but you're also talking about something that is, it's vulnerable in a way. Like, if you shared your own stories in there, that's obviously vulnerable, but you're helping people, and that's very risky. So, talk us through that process of writing the manuscript. What were you experiencing at the time?
So that manuscript that ultimately became Healing the Sensitive Heart was kind of, I would say, 90% brand new from the original one that I used to try to get an agent and then had to write the proposal and then had to write a manuscript. So it was like starting from scratch because then I had to really reorganize in a different way. I had a different goal. I had a different message to some degree. I mean, the essence of the message was still the same. I wanted to help people. I wanted to help people get through obstacles and overcome adversity and be able to shine and thrive. But it was, oh, what was that? Oh, my goodness, what was it like? So I'm a pretty much of a go-getter and a doer. So for me, I had to make a living, and I was a psychologist at the time, and I was working and seeing clients and sometimes working in agencies, and I had a young daughter, and I was a single mom. So I had to literally carve out time. I went to a writing workshop and they said, what do writers do? They write. So there's no excuse. When people say, well, I'll get to it in, next month or next week when my schedule frees up. No, I literally wrote it in my calendar as if they were my clients. So I would say from 10 to 2, I have writing time. It was scheduled and I would do that. And I would be very dedicated and diligent, excuse me. Otherwise, I just knew I was not going to get it done. There would always be an excuse as to why I couldn't. Now, I did do better when I had longer blocks of time than super short blocks because it would take me a while to get my thoughts together, but I felt like it was still important to just do it. And sometimes I would, at that time, well, by the way, at that time, I can't even remember. I had a word processor. I didn't even have a regular computer. So I think I got one shortly after that to actually write the manuscript. But when I was toying around with it, so I had a notepad with me all the time. Anytime I had an idea or a thought or an example that I remembered from someone in practice or even from my own life, I would just write it down. We didn't have dictation at that time. Probably we did in some very rudimentary fashion. So today, I think those obstacles would be much easier for people to overcome because you have access to technology that can make that much more efficient. There were times that I had what I guess would be called writer's block, but it was short-lived because I would just say, you know what? Don't that it always would go back to that dissertation chair lady, and I'd always go back to, you know what? She's not going to rule your life right now. You've got a lot of ideas. Just put them out there. So this free writing concept was very important to me. Like, don't get stuck on having to write the perfect sentence or the perfect paragraph. Just write. Just write and write and write. And eventually it'll come together and it'll kind of solve itself. And it did.
I love that you kind of highlighted, because when you said 10 till 2 to writing, I'm like, that's a huge block of time for a lot of people. That's like, well, I don't have the time of the day for that. But obviously, for you found that rhythm that works for you. Those larger blocks help you to get in the mindset a little bit more. I'm similar to you. I would allocate, well, at the moment, I allocate like half an hour a day to write. But what I do very quickly is I'll reread the chapter before I even start writing. So that way I'm in the same mental headspace and the same tone, the same style, all those kind of things. So I love that. But I know one of our, in fact, someone I'm catching up with in the next couple of days, she wrote her book with 8 minutes a day. She just said, I'm going to do 8 minutes a day of writing, and smashed that thing out. I couldn't believe how quickly she managed to get it done. So going crazy.
Well, that's curious. And I will say that once I had the proposal intact and I had already done the work of the first two chapters and I already had the outline, the proposal was actually more difficult to write than the actual book itself. So the final manuscript, I did write that in about 3 months. I wrote a full manuscript, but I did, have chunks of time. And what I did is I would take my clients who maybe would be on one day, and I'd put all clients on one day and then more time for writing the other day. So that's how I got those blocks of time. As a psychologist, it's very rare to meet somebody who actually works 40 hours a week doing psychotherapy. That's a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine it'd be exhausting.
I have done that before, but it really denies the client your full attention. And everything I want to give them. So I've really tried to keep my practice closer to 20, 25 people a week. And now in my, as I'm sort of doing other things even less. But at that time, I really tried to balance. And that is really important for listeners to hear, is that creating a balance in your life. If you're literally sitting at that computer now and you are sweating and you are just so stressed about writing, that's not positive. That's not going to get you anywhere. So yeah, break it down to smaller chunks. Just do something. Just sit down and do something.
Oh, that's so refreshing to hear. And with the therapy side, my wife's was a therapist up until we moved to Australia. And yeah, I mean, I saw she would definitely never work a 40-hour week, but you would see how exhausted she would come back, especially as she wished to work in the maximum security prison.
Well,
Just
she did.
yeah,
I
yeah, worked in the
know.
drug treatment unit there with drug addictions and helped people there. And that was insanely rewarding, but also insanely challenging and emotionally draining. And you're just constantly around people at the rock bottom. And it's yeah. So my honestly, full respect to any psychologist, any therapist, any counselor out there. You guys are absolute legends. I love that. Well, talk us through. We'll go back to the book here. And just lastly, for that first book, once you'd finished you kind of redone the writing, redone the manuscript. And you're going through that publishing process. What was your emotional state at the time? Like, what were you feeling as you realized I'm getting closer and closer to this being out there?
It's a long time ago, but the first word that came to mind was pride. I felt proud of myself. I felt like I
Nice.
had really accomplished something. And when I turned it into my editor, I was a little nervous because now somebody else is going to put eyes on it. And she did not want to read it along the way. She was the editor that was very open to, you know what, do your thing. I'm not going to judge it or interfere along the way. Just do your thing. And I will say that I didn't have to change one word. She loved it. And that was so validating. It was one of the most joyful moments of my life. She just said, "This is amazing. I think the only thing we want to do is maybe move this chapter, just maybe a little bit of a change of an introduction. This chapter sounds like it might be better suited over here, but you basically could take the chapter whole, that the sequence would flow better," was her idea. And that's what we did. And then they sent it off to copy editing. And it
I
was
can
very
tell you that is incredibly rare. Like the amount of,
I
I can count on one hand the amount of clients we that come to us where it's a one take one, like a one take wonder essentially. It's like, hey, I've written this, and usually, like you said, there's minor things in there, like, hey, you've introduced this concept here, but it's the first time you've introduced it. Maybe give a quick bit
Yes.
of, context to that kind of thing. But in general, it's pretty much spot on. We have other people come to us where we're reading the book and like halfway through going, I have no idea what this is about. I have no idea at all. This is going to require a lot of work, but we get them there, which is cool. Okay, well
I think
let's move
it's,
on. Oh, go on.
yeah. I was just gonna say, I think that's because I did so much due diligence in really learning how to write in that format and that process, that by the time I got there, I mean, I had bumbled around for such a long time already that I feel like I had a pretty polished idea of what that should look like. And I will say that for all my, it's a total of 5 books now, because this one, Sassy and Rude, is the fifth one. I have never had to do a rewrite. I've had to do a few little changes here and there because it's a little bit formulaic the way self-help books, they want certain things in a
Totally.
certain way.
Oh,
And
same as
so I've learned
marketing
my
course, to be
voice.
honest. Exactly. I can say I've got 11 books out there at the moment. I think maybe 12.
11. Wow,
Yeah,
woohoo.
I'm losing count, but I only recently have I had a one take wonder. My mindful marketing book. And actually, it was this email. So there's two books. Yeah, my latest two to go out there. For nonfiction. I got a big tick from our editors to going, hey, this is awesome. I mean, obviously, there's a few things there. I overuse certain words all the time,
Sure.
like hypothesis and things like that. I'll use that too many times. They'll take that out. But otherwise, it was pretty much one take wonder. But it's a cool feeling, isn't it? Awesome.
It
Well,
is
let's.
lovely. Oh, but when you say to using the same word, one of my things that I did have to alter is I use exclamation marks a lot because I'm a
Oh, same.
very enthusiastic, excited person. And my agent, even in my communications with her, she says, "Deborah, watch that. It's overuse. You dilute the impact of the exclamation mark if you overuse it." Ah, but that's how I talk. I'm
Yeah,
excited.
same. Not just one exclamation. I'll put like three or four there, and my editors and proofreaders are just going, come on now, don't do that.
Right.
Don't do that.
So.
Awesome. Well, let's fast forward now. So that was a really cool experience for you. And I love that when you got to the end of the book, when it's, you started getting that excitement, because for a lot of authors, they don't necessarily feel that. Like they feel the excitement to a degree, but it's usually overshadowed by imposter syndrome and, their self-defense and
Absolutely.
self-abuse systems essentially going, who do you think you are? Yeah.
Oh, that is so common for people and for your audience to really understand that that's so normal. It's so common, but you can work with that. Don't let that take over your mind, because that is what people do, is they start to fall into that negative thinking. And look, the fact that you're writing something, just go write.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my goodness, I love this. All
Yeah.
right, let's fast forward because I want to talk about your latest book now.
Okay.
So to give us a bit of a rundown first, what the book's about, Sassy and Rue, The New Attitude. Give us a rundown of what people can expect from that book.
Okay, so the subtitle sort of speaks to it. It's a tough love guide for the too nice mom on how to help bring back the sugar and spice in their not so nice adult daughters. And this was certainly inspired by my relationship with my daughter when she was an older teen and young adult. And we had a lot of friction, which is very common for moms and daughters. And it just, I had a lot of passion about it, a lot of frustration, a lot of passion. And since I already knew how to write a proposal, I just said, why not? And my original title was called Why Is She Such a Bitch? Which, by the way, I absolutely understand can go both ways. She thought I was a bitch. I thought she was a bitch. And lovingly I say that word, not hostily, but it was like, whoa, you're tearing your hair out this, So I put a lot of passion and energy into writing that, because I also had a lot of mother-daughter duos. They just, once you have an idea and you're very interested in something, it seems like the universe just starts sending more people with that particular issue
Of
in my
course.
practice. So I had lots and lots of examples and healing journeys that I had with people on how to write that. And this is what's so curious. I wrote that a long time ago,
Wow.
and it sat on my agents. She tried to sell it and she couldn't. And I said, you know what? That's it. Probably my writing career is over. And it was 2 years ago, two and a half years ago, I was in the hospital for a paper cut infection that went rogue,
Really?
literally my finger, that just, I got sepsis and it was terrible. And I was
See, I
on
knew paper
antibiotics.
cuts were dangerous. Everyone keeps telling me I'm a wuss, but I know that they're dangerous. There we go.
Yes, well, I didn't treat it. I didn't clean it, and then I continued to tear up cardboard for the recycling, and I was just, I guess I got a lot of stuff in there, and it was the size of a baseball mitt by the time I got to the hospital. So they were very worried about, blood poisoning, et cetera. So anyway, I'm there in the hospital. I get a note from my agent. Hey, by the way, I just met with an agent. I'm sorry, excuse me, an editor at lunch, and she asked me what's on my backlist because she didn't like some of the things I brought her. And she looked at that, why is she such a bitch? And she said, I want that title and I want that author. And so out of the blue, after several years of it just being dormant, my kind of figuring my writing career was over. Because my very hard as a psychologist now to sell books to agents and publishers, because the market is so saturated. So unless you have some super innovative
I was going to say, to
idea or
be fair,
niche
we're seeing
research.
some very prolific authors ditching publishing companies, like James Patterson. I know he's fiction,
Yes.
but he ditched his publishing
Yes.
company and does self-publishing, and exposed a lot of the in doing so, exposed a lot of the kind of behind the scenes of the publishing industry, which I thought was awesome. So
Absolutely.
yeah.
Yeah. But
I
I
love the
still,
fact that anyone who's had a daughter will immediately resonate with that book anyway, because as parents of an incredible young daughter, well, when I say young, she's about 28. Amazing woman, just very talented, very bright, very everything. But I'm going to say this: teenage girls are mental. Like, they're just there. I don't understand. Like, we even saw a joke about this, and she hates me joking about it. But when she wasn't even, she had just about hit puberty. I think she was like 12 or something. Came up the steps one morning, from the bedroom, and walked up the steps, and I went, "Morning." And she looked at me and she goes, "Why are you always so angry with me?" I'm like, "What?" And then I went, "Oh," and she goes, "No." And she knew straight away what I was going to say. She goes, "Don't you dare, Dan." And I said, That's right. You're going through puberty. And she goes, no, Dad, don't say it. Don't say it. I said, that means you're technically mental because their brain is rewiring. They are actually
it.
going through this. So,
Yeah.
yeah, we had a lot of laughs, but obviously, incredibly stressful. Like, we don't understand how difficult it is for teenage girls going through what they go through and the emotional stress and all sorts of things. So, yeah, that was tough. Could have used your book back then. Thanks for that. So,
It's a challenging relationship, as can be, fathers and sons, and fathers and daughters, and mothers and sons. But this was a particular agenda that felt really powerful and important to me to speak to, because it is very delicate and very sensitive. And I will say that my daughter and I have a beautiful and lovely relationship today. And we went through a lot of the tools and techniques and tips in the book, because it's just powerful when you really pay attention to your own responsibility in that, right? We always want to blame our teenagers. Oh, it's puberty, or it's this, or it's that. But the truth is, it's a dynamic energy between the two, and how we foster either healthy communication and a developmental positivity has a lot to do with what we understand about the process. And that's what the book is about, is to give understanding of that process in terms
love
of
that.
separation, individuation, developmentally, and just a lot of ways to look at things a little bit differently and maybe have a different result.
Wow. Well, that's a pretty powerful book. I'm very conscious of the time. This is a problem talking to you, Deborah. Honestly, I could talk to you for
Oh,
hours.
are we almost done?
We're
Holy
almost
moly.
done, but before we get to the part of the show where I ask you the same question I ask everyone, I do want to ask you one more thing, which is from that first experience, that first book with that, healing the sensitive heart, to now writing this latest book, Sassy and Rude, what changed about the way that you approach this? Do you still approach it the same? Like, what was it, a similar kind of journey going through it? Or once you've done one, have you released something there that makes it easier?
I like that what you just said. I definitely believe that once I got over a lot of my fears and anxieties about it, and my self-consciousness, that it was definitely a different and a more flowing experience. Still always had a little bit of anxiety, but it was I was a little bit more grounded in my own confidence that I could do this. So I would say that the takeaways that are so important for people to understand is, don't give up. You know what? No matter how many obstacles you encounter, find a way to conquer them, because they don't have to hold you back. And if you can't, then get a writing consultant or an expert or somebody who can help you through. And if it's anxiety, maybe a psychotherapist who can help you through some of that. So just don't give up. And the second would be compassionate toward yourself. And I would say this on just about everything in life. I think when we deal with ourselves and our frustrations with self-compassion, we're going to go a lot further in life than when we deal with it with shaming, negative self-talk, self-criticism. None of those things help us to thrive. So definitely be mindful of that. And probably the third one is to be proud. I was proud of myself, I told you. And I would say, just be proud of yourself that you would take on that endeavor, because it's very scary for so many people. Most people don't do it. Most people are closet writers. They want to be writers, but they don't do it. So you have courage. Be proud of that.
Love that. That's great advice, and especially be proud of that. It's one of the best feelings being a publisher is the moment that they open that book and you see that raw expression on their face. Like when they open the envelope from Amazon and the draft copy is in their hands, and you just see that giant grin, and they're trying everything to keep composed, but you can tell that they're like just swelling with pride, which is exactly what they should be feeling in that moment. Love it. Oh, look, Deborah, it's been such an honor having you on the show. Now I'm going to leave links to everywhere you can connect with Deborah in the show notes for this episode. So you know what to do. Go to chasingtheinsights.com, look for Deborah's smiling face. You're going to see a bunch of hyperlinks there. Links where you can connect with her on social, links where you can find her books, more importantly. And I highly encourage you, by the way, get a copy of Healing the Sensitive Heart, because I think all of us need to read that anyway. But the latest book, Sassy and Rude, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go and buy a copy of that. If you've got a daughter or you are a daughter, or you're around daughters, buy a copy of that book. Genuinely, it's going to shape how you understand communication and things. But also, if you know somebody else that has got a teenager or an older daughter or whatever, give them a copy of the book as well. Go and buy them a gift. Then come back and leave a rating or review for Deborah as well, because there's something we don't ask enough of as authors, where them and people don't realize how much it really impacts us to get those reviews. because it lets us know that A, the book is being read, that you're actually getting something from it. In fact, tell Deborah exactly what you got out of the book. Tell her what shifted in your life as a result of this, because it'll help Deborah for her next book and the book after that and the book after that. But also, it sends a signal to anyone else that's looking at that book to go, is this right for me? And when they hear you describe it, they go, you know what? That's exactly what I need to read right now. Deborah, thank you so much for joining us. Seriously, absolute privilege having you on the show.
Thank you so much. And I love that little plug. Thank you. I wish more radio show hosts did that for people. I love that. Thank you so
Hey, I
much.
wish they'd do that for my books. It feels a bit disingenuous telling anyone about my books
I'll
like
tell your audience right now, go and buy
that.
all of Vince's books. At least pick one and go buy it. How's
Yeah,
that?
all 11 books. There we go. No, I love that. Awesome. Well, there you go, everyone. Like I said, go to the show notes for this episode. Click on all those links. You're not going to regret it. Seriously. Deborah is not only super smart, she's also just a decent human being. So get more Deborah in your life. Simple as that. Plus, if you haven't already, reach out and give that subscribe or follow button a push. That way you're notified every time there's a new episode. Anyway, my friends, that is the formal part of the show out of the way. And before you run off, I know you're all dying to go and get copies of those books and you're dying to connect with Deborah everywhere. Totally need to do that. But before you do that, I want you to pause, I want you to be present, and I want you to hear something. Because whenever we have shows like this where we talk about the journey of being an author, a lot of the feedback we get here is about what stirs up inside of you. And I know for a fact, because it stirs up inside of me as well, often there is this thing that rises up that says, who do you think you are? What makes you think you have the right to write a story? Or what makes you think you have the right to write a book? Like, everyone's going to read this and they're going to look at it and they're going to think, what an amateur. Right. And I can tell you now, it doesn't matter what level you're at, that is what you go through. Like, I've talked to Seth, I've talked to, here we go, Brian Solis, Seth, we've talked to a bunch of different people there, Seth Godin, about their books. Same kind of principle. They've gone through it going, you know what? Every time a book comes out, I feel that imposter syndrome kick in. I feel that self-doubt kick in. And the reason I bring this up for all of you is because I want to tell you something, right? If you've thought about writing a book, you've thought about helping other people by putting things down on paper, you need to do it. Put it out there. Be bold, be brave, be proud of the stuff that you write. Yes, you may not be the top of your industry. You may not be as well known as somebody else that, one of your peers that are out there. It doesn't matter. And the reason it doesn't matter is because they can write a book, you can write a book, you have different audiences. You may help with the same kind of thing, but nobody has your experiences, your stories. Those are the things that are going to connect deeply with the people that read your book. So stop holding yourself back. Stop thinking, well, I can't do this. You've got as much right to write a book, put a book out there as any other human being. I can tell you that now. But I will also tell you there are people that are waiting for that. There are people that are waiting for you to show up, tell your story, be authentic, be vulnerable, waiting for you to let them know that you see them, that they are seen and they are understood, that their journey is not unique, that actually there are other people out there that know what they've gone through. So write that book, my friend. Don't hold yourself back. And on behalf of both Deborah and myself, we just want to wish you all of the health, all of the wealth, all of the happiness, the success, and the love that you so rightfully, and I do mean rightfully, deserve. Now, this is Chasing the Insights. I'm Vince Warnock. You, my friend, are an absolute freaking legend, and I'll see you in the next episode.